Chapter 151. Containing some particulars relative to the double knock, and other matters, among which certain interesting disclosures relative to Mr. Snodgrass and the young lady are by no means irrelevant to this history. The object that presented itself to the eyes of the astonished clerk was a boy, a wonderfully fat boy habited as a serving lad, standing upright on the mat, with his eyes closed, as if in sleep. He had never seen such a fat boy, in or out of a traveling caravan, and this, coupled with the calmness and repose of his appearance, so very different from what was reasonably to have been expected of the inflictor of such knocks, smote him with wonder. "What's the matter?" inquired the clerk. The extraordinary boy replied not a word, but he nodded once, and seemed, to the clerk's imagination, to snore feebly. "Where do you come from?" inquired the clerk. The boy made no sign. He breathed heavily, but in all other respects was motionless. The clerk repeated the question thrice, and receiving no answer, prepared to shut the door, when the boy suddenly opened his eyes, winked several times, sneezed once, and raised his hand, as if to repeat the knocking. Finding the door open, he stared about him with astonishment, and at length, fixed his eyes on Mr. Lowten's face. "What the devil do you knock in that way for?" inquired the clerk angrily. "Which way?" said the boy, in a slow and sleepy voice. "Why, like 40 hackney coachmen," replied the clerk. "Because master said, I wasn't to leave off knocking till they opened the door, for fear I should go to sleep," said the boy. "Well," said the clerk, "what message have you brought?"
"He's downstairs," rejoined the boy.
"Who?"
"Master. He wants to know whether you're at home."
Mr. Lowten bethought himself, at this juncture, of looking out of the window. Seeing an open carriage with a hearty old gentleman in it, looking up very anxiously, he ventured to beckon him, on which the old gentleman jumped out directly.
"That's your master in the carriage, I suppose?"
said Lowten. The boy nodded. All further inquiries were superseded by the appearance of old Wardle, who, running upstairs and just recognizing Lowten, passed at once into Mr. Perker's room.
"Pickwick,"
said the old gentleman. "Your hand, my boy. Why have I never heard until the day before yesterday of your suffering yourself to be cooped up in jail? And why did you let him do it, Perker?"
"I couldn't help it, my dear sir," replied Perker, with a smile and a pinch of snuff. "You know how obstinate he is?"
"Of course I do, of course I do," replied the old gentleman. "I am heartily glad to see him, notwithstanding. I will not lose sight of him again, in a hurry."
With these words, Wardle shook Mr. Pickwick's hand once more, and, having done the same by Perker, threw himself into an armchair, his jolly red face shining again with smiles and health.
"Well," said Wardle, "here are pretty goings on a pinch of your snuff. Perker, my boy, never were such times, eh?"
"What do you mean?"
inquired Mr. Pickwick.
"Mean?"
replied Wardle. "Why, I think the girls are all running mad. That's no news, you'll say?
Perhaps it's not, but it's true, for all that.
You have not come up to London, of all places in the world, to tell us that, my dear sir, have you?"
inquired Perker.
"No, not altogether," replied Wardle, "though it was the main cause of my coming. How's Arabella?"
"Very well," replied Mr. Pickwick, "and will be delighted to see you, I am sure."
"Black-eyed little jilt,"
replied Wardle. "I had a great idea of marrying her myself, one of these odd days. But I am glad of it too, very glad. Apostrophe, how did the intelligence reach you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Pickwick.
Oh, it came to my girls, of course, apostrophe, replied Wardle. Arabella wrote, the day before yesterday, to say she had made a stolen match without her husband's father's consent, and so you had gone down to get it, when his refusing it couldn't prevent the match, and all the rest of it. I thought it a very good time, to say something serious to my girls, so I said what a dreadful thing it was that children should marry without their parents' consent, and so forth. But, bless your hearts, I couldn't make the least impression upon them. They thought it such a much more dreadful thing, that there should have been a wedding without bridesmaids, that I might as well have preached to Joe himself. Apostrophe here the old gentleman stopped to laugh, and having done so to his heart's content, presently resumed, but this is not the best of it, it seems. This is only half the love-making and plotting that have been going forward. We have been walking on mines for the last 6 months, and they're sprung at last. Apostrophe, what do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Pickwick, turning pale. No other secret marriage, I hope? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, replied old Wardle. Not so bad as that, no. Apostrophe, what then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Pickwick. Am I interested in it? Apostrophe, shall I answer that question, Perker? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Wardle. If you don't commit yourself by doing so, my dear sir. Apostrophe, well then, you are, apostrophe, said Wardle.
How?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Pickwick anxiously. In what way?
Apostrophe, really, apostrophe, replied Wardle, you're such a fiery sort of a young fellow, that I am almost afraid to tell you. But, however, if Perker will sit between us to prevent mischief, I'll venture.
Apostrophe, having closed the room door, and fortified himself with another application to Perker's snuff box, the old gentleman proceeded with his great disclosure in these words, the fact is, that my daughter Bella Bella, who married young Trundle, you know.
Apostrophe, yes, yes, we know, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick impatiently.
Don't alarm me at the very beginning. My daughter Bella Emily having gone to bed with a headache, after she had read Arabella's letter to me sat herself down by my side the other evening, and began to talk over this marriage affair.
Well, Pa, she says, what do you think of it?
Why, my dear, I said, I suppose it's all very well, I hope it's for the best. I answered in this way, because I was sitting before the fire at the time, drinking my grog rather thoughtfully, and I knew my throwing in an undecided word now and then would induce her to continue talking. Both my girls are pictures of their dear mother, and as I grow old I like to sit with only them by me, for their voices and looks carry me back to the happiest period of my life, and make me, for the moment, as young as I used to be then, though not quite so light-hearted. It's quite a marriage of affection, Pa, said Bella, after a short silence.
Yes, my dear, said I, but such marriages do not always turn out the happiest.
Apostrophe, I question that, mind.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed Mr. Pickwick warmly.
Very good, apostrophe, responded Wardle. Question anything you like, when it's your turn to speak, but don't interrupt me.
Apostrophe, I beg your pardon, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick.
Granted, apostrophe, replied Wardle. I am sorry to hear you express your opinion against marriages of affection, Pa, said Bella, coloring a little.
I was wrong, I ought not to have said so, my dear either, said I, patting her cheek as kindly as a rough old fellow like me could pat it, for your mother's was one, and so was yours.
It's not that I meant, Pa, said Bella. The fact is, Pa, I wanted to speak to you about Emily.
Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick started.
What's the matter now?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Wardle, stopping in his narrative.
Nothing, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick.
Pray go on.
Apostrophe, I never could spin out a story, apostrophe, said Wardle abruptly.
It must come out, sooner or later, and it'll save us all a great deal of time, if it comes at once. The long and the short of it is, then, that Bella at last mustered up courage to tell me that Emily was very unhappy, that she and dear young friend Snodgrass had been in constant correspondence and communication ever since last Christmas, that she had very dutifully made up her mind to run away with him, in laudable imitation of her old friend and schoolfellow, but that having some compunctions of conscience on the subject, inasmuch as I had always been rather kindly disposed to both of them, they had thought it better in the first instance to pay me the compliment of asking whether I would have any objection to their being married in the usual matter-of-fact manner. There now, Mr. Pickwick, if you can make it convenient to reduce your eyes to their usual size again, and to let me hear what you think we ought to do, I shall feel rather obliged to you. The testy manner in which the hearty old gentleman uttered this last sentence was not wholly unwarranted, for Mr. Pickwick's face had settled down into an expression of blank amazement and perplexity, quite curious to behold. Snodgrass. Since last Christmas. Were the first broken words that issued from the lips of the confounded gentleman. Since last Christmas, replied Wardle, that's plain enough, and very bad spectacles we must have worn, not to have discovered it before. I don't understand it, said Mr. Pickwick, ruminating. I cannot really understand it. It's easy enough to understand it, replied the choleric old gentleman. If you had been a younger man, you would have been in the secret long ago, and besides, added Wardle, after a moment's hesitation, the truth is, that, knowing nothing of this matter, I have rather pressed Emily for 4 or 5 months past, to receive favorably if she could. I would never attempt to force a girl's inclinations, the addresses of a young gentleman down in our neighborhood. I have no doubt that, girl-like, to enhance her own value and increase the ardor of Mr. Snodgrass, she has represented this matter in very glowing colors, and that they have both arrived at the conclusion that they are a terribly persecuted pair of unfortunates, and have no resource but clandestine matrimony, or charcoal. Now the question is, what's to be done? What have you done? Inquired Mr. Pickwick. I mean, what did you do when your married daughter told you this? I made a fool of myself, of course, rejoined Wardle. Just so, interposed Perker, who had accompanied this dialogue with sundry twitchings of his watch chain, vindictive rubbings of his nose, and other symptoms of impatience. That's very natural, but how? I went into a great passion, and frightened my mother into a fit, said Wardle. That was judicious, remarked Perker, and what else? I fretted and fumed all next day, and raised a great disturbance, rejoined the old gentleman. At last I got tired of rendering myself unpleasant and making everybody miserable, so I hired a carriage at Muggleton, and, putting my own horses in it, came up to town, under pretense of bringing Emily to see Arabella. Miss Wardle is with you, then? Said Mr. Pickwick. To be sure she is, replied Wardle. She is at Osborne's Hotel in the Adelphi at this moment, unless your enterprising friend has run away with her since I came out this morning. You are reconciled then? Said Perker. Not a bit of it, answered Wardle. She has been crying and moping ever since, except last night, between tea and supper, when she made a great parade of writing a letter that I pretended to take no notice of. You want my advice in this matter, I suppose? Said Perker, looking from the musing face of Mr. Pickwick to the eager countenance of Wardle, and taking several consecutive pinches of his favorite stimulant. I suppose so, apostrophe said Wardle, looking at Mr. Pickwick.
Certainly, apostrophe replied that gentleman.
Well then, apostrophe said Perker, rising and pushing his chair back, my advice is, that you both walk away together, or ride away, or get away by some means or other, for I'm tired of you, and just talk this matter over between you. If you have not settled it by the next time I see you, I'll tell you what to do.
Apostrophe, this is satisfactory, apostrophe said Wardle, hardly knowing whether to smile or be offended.
Pooh, pooh, my dear sir, apostrophe returned Perker. I know you both a great deal better than you know yourselves. You have settled it already, to all intents and purposes.
Apostrophe, thus expressing himself, the little gentleman poked his snuff box first into the chest of Mr. Pickwick, and then into the waistcoat of Mr. Wardle, upon which they all three laughed, especially the two last-named gentlemen, who at once shook hands again, without any obvious or particular reason.
You dine with me today, apostrophe said Wardle to Perker, as he...
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.